God, that is hideous. Get it off my vision. Oh, God, it's disgusting. Evoke convertible. Oh.
Well, it's quite fun that I'm stuck here in the studio working away over a hot monitor whilst you're stuck in the lap of luxury down in Cape Town. Living the life. Cape Town.
Southern Cape, but yeah. Someone has to do it.
Whatever. It all looks the same from up here. It's kind of like you're down there, I'm not.
How is my hometown treating you?
Today it is hot. It is absolutely blistering. So I'm actually sitting here in shorts and flops underneath my minted logo shirt. So yeah, I'm assured by TADAC that this will not be exposed to anyone on our channel.
All I can say is I better not stand up in front of the camera. Let's just put it that way.
TMI. Maybe we should begin before this gets to the point where I blush. Okay, folks, welcome to
our 18 episode.
Banned
Sorry, William,
YouTube.
Take it away.
Here we go, folks. Welcome to it. This is Tech Central's What's and Wheels. We are in season 1, episode 5. I'm William, and joining me remotely today is Duncan McLeod, the editor and supremo of Tech Central today. And we are going to be bringing you a whole bunch of stuff of what's wild and wacky in the world of motoring in South Africa, with obviously our focus on EVs and new energy vehicles being where we try to aim things.
It's been a few months since we recorded our last one. How are you, Prince William?
No, Prince William is doing well, thank you. All the better for seeing your gorgeous countenance, albeit not in reality, but on a very large screen here. You're much bigger than normal, actually. It's taking some getting used to. But you know, that's part and parcel of the process of let's see how the virtual working goes.
I am much bigger. I've been eating my vegetables.
Good for you. You're looking very healthy. Obviously life down in the Cape is treating you well.
It is indeed.
Well, let's just kick off, because I was in the Cape a while back because I was on the launch of the Suzuki Across, or Across, I just call it Across. And just to fill you in with that, it is a, guess what, a mid-entry level sized SUV from Suzuki. And if you're wondering that Suzuki already has a mid-level entry sized SUV, you'd be correct. The Grand Vitara is exactly the direct competition to the Suzuki Across. And so the obvious question we, as avid motoring journalists, all posed to Suzuki was, well, what are you thinking? Why are you bringing in a direct competitor to a model that you're already doing quite well with? And Suzuki's answer to that was, well, the Across is new and slightly different, has slightly different looks, and may appeal to someone who wasn't turned on enough by the Grand Vitara. And it's interesting. The Across is priced at $350,000 for the entry-level version, going all the way up to $465,000 for the big version, which has got all the spec and toys attached to it. Actually, of the three, I think I would actually go for the one with all the toys attached to it. There's a lot of spec that the vehicles are now coming out with as standard. And the model that the Chinese have of, here's your car, sir, it has everything attached, you don't need to add everything else to it, is one that the Japanese seem to be adopting. And certainly the impact of the Cross on our market in that regard is good news, I think, for the consumers. On launch, I mean, one's always suspicious when they drive these things down in Cape Town. Sorry, Duncan, you were saying?
Sorry, I was just saying that, sorry, a bit of latency on the line, but that Across is, it's difficult to see in the pictures, but how big is it?
A little bit bigger than the Grand Vitara, so sort of Chery Tigger 4 Plus size, VW T-Cross size, that sort of size. It's a five-seater, quite comfortably five-seaters, and it's got a fairly decent size boot to the hatch to it. So it's, what I like about it is that it's fairly rugged. You know, it's got decent size rubber on the rims, and it's one of these cars that will handle Joburg potholes quite well, I think. Potholes is a bit of a swear word at the moment, having replaced not one but two tires on one side of you, which has these low profile things that just explode if they look at a pothole. Increasingly, we're being forced to drive these enormous SUVs because of the condition of our roads. But you don't have that problem down there.
No, thankfully. Anyway. Where is this positioned exactly? And of course, many of the Suzukis that are available in this market are simply rebadged Toyotas. Is that the case with this particular vehicle?
Yes, but we're not allowed to say so. Toyota do not have this particular model coming into our country with a Toyota badge on it, at least not yet. So the Across is actually known as something else overseas. The name escapes me for the time being, but in our market it's called the Across. And I mean the name Across versus Corolla Cross. I mean, you know, the guys might as well just have called it the Suzuki Cross. So I suspect that that's the segment of the market that they're taking aim at with this model. So mm-hmm. as I say, 350 to 465, three derivatives in it. And as I say, we were driving it down in Cape Town. It's always suspicious when you have a normally aspirated 1.5 litre engine coming to Cape Town, because that is really the only little thing I could say about the Cross that I didn't like, was I think it needs a little bit more power. A bit wheezy. But you know, that motor's been doing duty in hundreds of thousands, if not millions of vehicles without complaints. So you just rev the nuts out of it and you'll be fine. So
good.
We'll see how it sells.
We'll rate it in our hot or not section a bit later in the show. Sorry, William, I'm interrupting you. The latency is terrible on the
Not at all. No, that's absolutely. But the one thing I did like about it is that what Suzuki have done is they've got knobs. They've brought back knobs and buttons and switches for sensible things like your aircon. And whilst the Across has, of course, the infotainment system that everybody has these days, what I liked about the fact of being able to just access your aircon and indeed your sound via knobs and buttons makes your day-to-day driving experience just that much easier. So it's not to say that that the all touchscreen things are completely the devil, but all touchscreen things where you've got no control to knobs are completely the devil. And this is something that, funnily enough, seems to be a trend now, because VW have also announced that they're also going back to knobs and switches. So it's a case of, I haven't been in a VW since Pa fell off the bus. So I'm not overly familiar with their new cabins. But in this picture of a reimagined Audi 100, which is actually my first car. My first car was an Audi 100.
Oh, really?
Yeah, how cool is this? How cool does this car look? If that came on the market, I think that's sexy as hell. But across the VW group, you know, sort of knobs and switches are back in fashion, and I think that can only be a good thing for us going forwards. By all means, keep the infotainment systems. Allow you to change your airflows and your volumes and whatever it is on the infotainment systems, but just allow me that knob to be able to immediately reach down and adjust my temperature or adjust my tunes as I'm driving. Those are the most important things for me. So
I could say something here about Prince William loving his knobs, but we'll move rapidly along.
I realized as I said that there was probably something I should just. Speaking of knobs, shall we talk about Dong Feng? they recently, as in like today, announced an addition to their lineup, and you know, Dongfeng sort of, I suppose, crawled their way to fame in South Africa with the debut of their first little car, which they named the Box. Someone really should talk to them about naming conventions, and that really in South Africa. We can change the names to something else. Anyway, they've got a new version out here, and you, in fact, mentioned this to us, and it's the Dongfeng Nami. Nami Box Stroke 01, and Nami Box Stroke 06, and an E3. So Dongfeng, which is not a name that crosses across our feed a hell of a lot, seem to be expanding their range considerably now. And what's interesting about this is these are sub-500K full EVs. And I think the Nami 01. In fact, there was a version of it I saw somewhere online where they've actually named it the Nano. And the Nano, I think, is a far better name than the NAM. But that's just...
Yes.
You've written here it's got a 70-kilowatt motor with a 430-kilometer CLTC range. Now, CLTC versus WLTP, you know, pays your money, it picks your choice. Call it what it is, roughly 430-odd Ks. At best, real world, probably 350 Ks upwards, and fast charging. So you can charge it from 30 to 80% in around about half an hour if you've got access to a fast charger, if that's your thing. And then NAMI 01.
Yeah, and it's got a, for the entry level model, has a 44.9 kilowatt hour battery cell in it, so it's not the biggest, but you can't expect the biggest battery in a car that's coming in at sub 500,000 rand, especially if you consider that the manufacturers are having to pay the higher import duties on these vehicles compared to ICE vehicles, which is absolutely crazy. That sort of sub 500,000 rand EV market is starting to hot up a lot.
I get this nervous twitch when you start talking about tariffs on EVs and really. We are talking about that in episode 6 with Donald Mackay coming up, because we threatened to talk about it in episode 4. We're definitely going to do it. And then you've got the NAMI 06, which is an SUV derivative. Pricing on that is between 500 and 580,000. And that starts at 410 kilometers of range for the E1 and goes up to the E3, which pushes up range to 480 kilometers. That looks like an interesting vehicle. So it's starting to get into the same territory of Geely's 700K SUV, but obviously considerably cheaper. So the price wars with EVs are beginning to hot up in the South African space, and it's certainly interesting to note that Autotrader of all publications were reporting that post the little kerfuffle we've had in the Far East. And the subsequent hike on our fuel prices, that interest in EVs and the number of searches for EVs on their platform has seen a massive spike. And yours truly has been sort of keeping an eye on secondhand EVs, looking for, you know, little Volvo XC40 twin going for ridiculously cheap prices, and they've all gone. They've just disappeared.
Oh, no.
I'm wondering whether that whether we may have reached a bit of a tipping point in South Africa, where at least if EVs aren't selling in the numbers like they are in Australia, they're up to something like 23% market share already in Australia. It's nuts. And what Australia does, we follow. That at least the EV narrative is coming to the fore of South African consciousness a lot more aggressively than it would have before. I mean, for you and I, this is old hat. We died in the wool EV guys, but you know, it's a case of everybody else is now starting to catch up.
Well, I still do drive a big diesel guzzling pickup truck, Bucky, and when I pulled up into the local filling station the other day and saw that the price of diesel had risen from around 20 rand to 28 rand 50 per litre, I suddenly started thinking very seriously about trading that thing in and getting either a PHEV or a full EV for my purposes going forward, because 28 rand 50 a litre is it hurts.
It hurts, and there's more to come. So
no doubt.
We're not out of the woods with any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah,
we'll see what it's like at the end of the year. All the big economists are saying by the end of the year we'll be back to normal, but what the new normal is then, I don't know. If we suddenly used to 28 rand a litre, maybe it's going to stay there. Who knows? You know. Yeah. But it comes down to a sort of our neat little segue into our next section, which is the affordability of cars in South Africa. And a very interesting point was raised at SOMI by Mr. Andrew Kirby when he was talking about this thing called the ad valorem tax. It got me to thinking, is like, you know, if you go back to when you were a student or when you just had your first job, Duncan, back in the days of well, probably around the same time as me, actually, just before the arc.
Probably.
what it took for us to be able to afford an entry-level car back then. And these days, an entry-level car is well over 200 grand. And guess what the ad valorem taxes on an entry-level car are these days? They were the same as if you were buying a BMW 7 Series back in the day when we were buying a new car, just to show you how ad valorem bracket creep has hammered entry-level cars. So it's ludicrous that entry-level cars are being charged the same ad valorem as the 7 Series was when we had entry-level cars 20 years ago. And it just goes to show that the affordability of new cars is ever increasingly under pressure. And maybe that's why the Chinese, with their value propositions, have done so well. And, you know, we're looking, what's an entry-level car these days? VW Polo, 220 odd grand, plus extras as soon as you start to add to them. It starts to stack up quite quickly. And, you know, what's interesting is, that all said, Polo just sent out, or VW, who made Polo, just released an announcement that they've exported 500,000 of their current derivative of the VW Polo. So they're obviously doing something right, with the bulk of these actually going to Germany.
Extraordinary numbers. So just to get the quote on this exactly right, Polo has exported 500,000 current derivative, and that happened recently. Additionally, the Polo was recently announced by Car Magazine as the winner in a small car segment in 2026. So Polo has exported 500,000 of the current derivative, derivative of the Polo. So one of the most successful cars ever to be manufactured in South Africa. They've been manufacturing this thing here, believe it or not, William, for the past 30 years already.
It's nuts. I mean, when you remember when the first Polos came out, those little square boxy things. And I think to date they've made over 1.9 million Polos in total.
It could even be over 2 million by now.
It's done very well for VW. As you were saying, it was voted best small car in the 50th edition, no less, of Auto, Motor und Sports Best Readers Cars, Best Cars Readers Poll. Oh God, say that three times quickly, which is the largest car reader survey in Europe. So that's no small achievement.
Yeah. The biggest export market, I think, is the UK, which makes sense. They're manufacturing all the right-hand drive Polos locally.
You can.
But I want to come back to the what you were saying about the affordability, William, of new cars in South Africa, because you've actually seen some research of what it takes to buy an entry level car in terms of the minimum measuring the minimum wage against against the cost of a new car in particular markets and how long you'd have to work for to be able to afford that car. And what does it actually tell us about other markets in relation to South Africa?
I kind of wish you'd forgotten about that, because now I have to put on my communist hat and let's discuss minimum wages and all this kind of thing. So the math is very simple. In the UK, if you earn minimum wage, it will take you 1,600 minimum wage hours to buy that Polo. Okay, so 1,600 hours minimum wage, you can have a Polo. Can't eat, can't live, can't do anything, but you can have a Polo. Mm-hmm. And there are people that would do that. In the US, unfortunately, you can't buy a Polo, but the closest thing I could find to a Polo is, in fact, a Kia K4, entry-level compact car. In the US, you're a lot worse off than you are in the UK, because it will take you 3,000 hours at minimum wage to buy a Kia K4. That's okay, because Americans are used to working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's what they do. They're fine.
That's a lot of burger flipping.
3,000 hours to buy your K4, yeah. Yeah, it's quite a few burgers. And I don't know, probably the average American family to eat them all in that time frame. In South Africa, it's a little bit worse than that, just a little bit. At minimum wage, it will take you 14,920 hours.
Ow.
To buy said Polo. So almost 15,000 hours, five times what it would take you in the US, and about 9.5 times what it would take you in the UK to buy said car. That just gives you an indication of South African purchasing power across the board. And I just want to say that this has worsened since we introduced minimum wage, just by the way. So I'm not an advocate that minimum wage is, by increasing that, is a way to put everybody into Polos. It just isn't. Our solution is to create more jobs, put more people into salaries, pay less tax, because you have more people paying into the net, and then we can have cheaper cars and everybody can afford a 911, which is the way it should be. Speaking of 911s, Enoch Godongwana has in his wisdom decided that he's going to up the maximum price that cabinet members and provincial MECs can afford from 800,000 to 1.1 million.
So, and the reason cited?
I think, inflation, VIP security requirements, blah, 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 blah. You know that nervous ticker I get about import duties? The less said about this, the better, to be honest. Moving swiftly along. I'm just glad that 911 is a little bit more than 1.1 million rand, because seeing these guys driving around 911s would actually make me vomit.
I hate to tell you this, William, but our next topic is going to make you even angrier, I suspect. And that's that the city of Johannesburg is deploying, through its power utility, City Power, is deploying EV charging stations. Now, this is the electric utility. I'm no longer a Johannesburg resident, but I know all about this company and its history of inability to provide a reliable supply of electricity. I'm sure this has continued post my departure from Johannesburg. But should the city of Johannesburg, City Power, really be focusing on deploying EV charging infrastructure when it can't even deliver the basics to households?
Well, it doesn't actually make me all that mad. I think it's a step in the right direction that they've done it, that they've acknowledged they need to do it. Of course, they've overpaid for it and cocked it up. But I mean, but they've acknowledged that EV is maybe a way forward. And allegedly, this is available to the public, albeit the fact that it is in middle of Joburg and in Boysens, and I'm not entirely sure how many people are going to want to take their EVs down to the middle of Joburg and Boysens, given the fact that the infrastructure in Joburg and Boysens isn't exactly left anymore. You actually need roads and things to get to these things, but be that as it may, there's a magnitude of controversy around this particular contract with the established providers, the CPOs, having been raising all kinds of questions around this particular tender. But if Joburg finally gets into the grips of understanding that electrification of their fleet is probably going to save them money over a period of time, maybe this is the first step that they can only get better with. And Godspeed, and may they continue to do this and get better at it. And let's see how it all rolls out. As for them rolling out for the public, I don't think any of us need to hold our breath in that regard. BYD, I think we'll have that sorted. Good cars will have that sorted. Rubicon will be on their way. Aversa have got a whole bunch of stuff coming out. So
I think you're right that it makes sense for the city to do it for its own requirements, perhaps, but it should not be expanding this into becoming a consumer-facing proposition.
Oh, goodness.
It should absolutely not be the city of Johannesburg. Oh, we're going to become a competitor in the supply of EV charging stations. That absolutely must be left to the private sector.
100%. 100%. It will be very interesting. I mean, we're going to have someone from one of these providers who's commercializing EV for fleet in the commercial space to talk to us about that. And I've already had some initial discussions with them around it. But the complexities of electrifying a fleet are staggering. It is not a straightforward, simple box-ticking exercise. We're just going to go, okay, there's a diesel, chuck it out, put an EV, job done. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work like that. If only it did, we're all like to believe it does, but it doesn't work that way. There are complexities and there are implications to those complexities that you need to get right. But we have that lined up in an upcoming episode, and that's going to be a fascinating insight. So we'll see.
All right. I see the next segment of the show is called the Crazy Chinese segment. Let's get this video up on the screen here. What are we looking
at
here?
It's mental. It's actually BYD's luxury division, and this is a car that they – I mean, look at it.
What?
It's swimming. It's actually swimming. I mean, it's –
the kid in the back mind is boggles. Paddling.
The mind boggles. It's so close to there that if you get a slight ripple in that, that thing is going down. But it's – there it is. I mean, it's just
– wow.
It swam across a lake.
Now, this is a Yang Wang. What's this thing called? It's a BYD subsidiary. Yang Wang something.
It is.
Yang
Wang, it's a luxury YA division from BYD. Yeah. And honestly, I think the Chinese these days are just doing this stuff just to prove that they can, and just show us Westerners just how far we've got to come to catch up. Whether you're ever going to use this or not. You're never going to use it, but you know. I suppose maybe if you really wanted to go fishing, you could.
Look how close the water is to that window.
God help you if you catch a big fish. But you know, there it is. It's just crazy. I mean, you know, and the stuff out of China just doesn't seem to stop it. They keep coming up with stuff. I mean, I fully expect next week there'll be a moon rover. You know, that's what's coming. It's just nonsense. But on that, on the topic of you know, the Chinese have got this, but we'd be having this, and I want to cut to a video now of what looks like something out of Mad Max. And
what
and
the heck is like that?
It looks like a mass people transporter, doesn't it? And I think we touched on this in one of our earlier episodes, but this is actually one of the cleverest things I've seen that an absolute mental nutcase by the name of Gary Davies has created. It's an electric game viewing vehicle. And I thought, I have got to speak to this madman and understand what it is that he's done. So we got him into studio and we did an interview with him. And you guys can watch for yourselves and get a sense of what's behind this particular vehicle.
8 years ago now, I think, no, we're into our ninth year, I just had this crazy idea that we should be driving in the bush silently. We should be really immersing ourselves in nature and not having the sound and the vibration of a diesel or petrol engine on a game viewer. And I said, well, how do I go about doing that? I looked around, there was nothing available. And I said, right, I think I should build one myself.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah. How hard can it be?
Exactly. I thought, oh,
yeah. Hold my beer. Watch this.
Yeah. Exactly one of those moments. And I thought, oh, yeah, it's not complicated. Electric vehicle, you need a battery, you need an inverter, you need you know, a motor and, yeah,
it's chassis and some wheels.
Yeah, fairly simple. Yeah. And I thought, give myself 3 years, this project will be off the ground. And then we reset everything, scrapped it, 5 years, wasted. You know.
There's a bit of learning under the belt, yeah. No, you now know what you don't know.
Yeah, real school fees paid in that.
Sure.
And then we engaged with the University of Pretoria. We engaged with a company called Automotive Investment Holdings, MECAD, some good engineers, and we said, right, if we were going to do this from the beginning, how would we do it? And then we designed the chassis. We used a number of OEM suspension parts. You know, you don't want to go through the whole development process of that. Yeah, you know, people in the automotive industry have been designing steering racks for
centuries.
Yeah. And so we weren't going to go there. So we cobbled together a lot of those moving working parts that I tried and tested.
Interesting word, clipping on. Are you not screwing them and bolting them and welding them on? Is it?
It's a.
Walk me through that clipping comment there.
It's a combination, and we had a look at various production methodology in this vehicle, and yeah, a lot of traditional automotive they build the body with all the doors. Then they take it through paint. Well, they dip it and then they paint it, spray paint. And we said, well, could we do something differently? And we literally, the entire body is being painted offline with the ability just to clip it together on the subframe that we've done. From a production point of view, we thought that would be the most effective way to do it, because then you don't have to paint the vehicle after that, because it's already done.
Done.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've been following Slate, Slate Trucks.
Yes, yeah.
They may have just copied you. similar sort of thing, you know. So you don't paint the panels, you just have them wrapped, and then you just pop them on, and you can chop and change. High degree of customization to that. So it sounds like this is the sort of route that you've gone forward.
Yeah. So we've done some real testing with our vehicle, and in normal driving conditions for our vehicle, that's off-road terrain, up and down hills, this, that, next, and we'll get about 200 kilometers.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Way more than you need, but that's great.
Way more than we need. We did quite a lot of research. There are three safari camps in Africa that have retrofitted electric fleets, one in Kenya, one in Botswana, and one in South Africa. And we went to all three of them, you know, just to gauge. And they said 150 kilometers is way more than we'll ever need.
Yeah.
You know, if you could give us 150, it would be insane. Yeah. So we just, And you'll see our approach to engineering and everything about this vehicle is we take what they want and we try improve it by 20-25%.
So make it bigger and then make it another bit bigger and add in another safety margin.
So... certainly from range, we have no issue. Okay. We've got a 63 kilowatt battery in there. Again, the battery tech has all been quite, key for us wanting to make it South African.
Presumably, the vehicle itself is four-wheel drive.
Okay, so what we've done is we've got motor front and back, rear and front, 150 kilowatt motors. I mean, it is insanely overpowered and over-engineered for what it can be.
I approve. I approve this message.
Yeah. I mean, it's
a little bit of me going, why only 150?
Yeah.
No. So you have 300 kilowatts on tap.
No, no.
In a
game view. It's insanely.
So it will outrun a Rhino.
It should do. Yeah. It'll outrun a Rhino almost up a vertical cliff.
Yeah, it's good to know.
Yeah. So certainly, yeah. I mean, over-engineered that. Fascinating story. And we're still trying to get there. So this is still in development. But even the fan, you know, because we still have to cool the inverter and the motors are water-cooled. But the fan, Mahle, M-A-H-L-E, the automotive component manufacturer.
German.
They came and met with us, and they've designed a fan based on the leading edge of a owl wing, okay? So there's proper biomimicry going into developing a fan just to reduce the noise. Our fan only kicks in once the motor gets to a certain temperature. So normal driving conditions, it won't. But if you're going up an extended incline and stuff
running
like that.
Running away from a Rhino, it might get a bit hot. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And typically this is, as somebody coined it, the Bentley of the bush. Yeah, this will be the Bentley of the bush. It will be a top-end, a top-end vehicle at that market. So if you compare it with what's currently in the market, and I can use brand names here, but it's the Toyota Land Cruiser.
Yes.
Is considered to be top of the range. Once you've taken a Toyota Land Cruiser, cut it up, put on a whole bunch of seats, you're probably in for about 1.3. Yeah. Now, you take the running costs, fuel, and gosh, it's the oil price currently. You know, our vehicle pays for itself quite quickly now. But
Donald Trump has his way, it'll be even quicker than that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if it's equitable over a four and a half year period to the same cost now, okay? But I'm very, people always try to compare it. And I go, it's like comparing a landline to a cell phone.
Sure.
They both make calls, they both do the things, but why will somebody pay 20,000 Rand for a cell phone and a landline? They both make calls. And it's the experience in a silent vehicle in the bush that is just,
You've built a vehicle from the ground up fit for purpose and specifically for a very target niche of people who go doing game drives in the bush.
Mm.
I think it's an absolute winner. I love the idea of a silent game viewer. I absolutely love it, because the first thing I recall, but one of my friends was a game driver in one of these very upmarket private estates, and the first thing we always did in approaching a viewing was you would find one that was downhill from you, so you could turn the engine off at the top of the hill and just coast down, and the only thing you heard was the creak of the suspension, really, which I presume your suspension will not creak, but and the crunch of the tires. And the difference it makes to the animals is stark. Yeah. Yes, they do get used to the sound of a diesel engine eventually. But, I mean, you know, when you've got something skittish like a leopard or what have you, which is hard to see at the best of times, the last thing you want to do is see it bloody run off the bush because you've come thundering down this dirty, great big diesel.
And then the second part of that is, when you exit the sighting, because I think you've got to be able to go into a sighting and leave it
the way you found it.
Yeah. But typically, you know, people might coast in, but then that's a crank of the starter motor. And then all the animals like look up, what was that?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's broken that natural feel. So electric, as you said.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. I cannot wait to see this vehicle. I had a sneak peek a few months ago, but I cannot wait to see the next version. Yeah. It launches in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah,
I will be there. I'm hoping. Fantastic. I hope I get an invite. I crack the nod.
You crack the
nod. We will bring the coverage of the actual thing to our dear and valued viewers.
Yeah,
Gary, thank you so much for coming in. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Hope we can do it again post the launch.
Anytime.
I definitely want to get one for a test for I don't know. 6 months or so. I'd love to see this thing on the road. The looks it will attract will be amazing.
Look fantastic.
That's an electric game viewing vehicle, and it's an amazing product. I don't think they're going to sell billions of the things, but that's not the intention. I think they're going to sell enough to make it a really, really interesting, worthwhile niche business, 100% made in South Africa, and with the incredible frustrations of homologation, just reinforcing the fact that South Africa is a really difficult place to make stuff these days. And we need to change that mindset. We need to reverse our deindustrialization that we are undertaking, or we're going to be in serious, serious trouble. And, you know, products like this, South African ingenuity, South African innovation, and South African sheer bloody mindedness to make it happen, I can't sing praises of it highly enough. So when it's on launch, I have been assured we will be invited, and let's go and see it.
Very cool story.
Very cool story. All success to them. All success to them, and it happens despite government, which is I think the takeaway.
William, you were about to tee up the next segment.
I was about to tee up the next segment, leaping into the next segue, which of course is the Leap Motor C10. That post-launch, I actually got my hands on for a week, and we did a video on it of what we thought.
Okay, so Leap on the road. The first thing you must notice is I talk about how quiet cars are generally, but this one is exceptionally quiet. There's almost no road noise. There's almost no wind noise. You very rarely hear anything from the chassis, from the suspension. Occasionally, if you go over a really deep pothole, something that can't be avoided, you hear this ka-donk. But it's as quiet as a sepulcher. Yeah. It really, really is noticeably quiet. And that adds to the enjoyment of the drive. You don't notice anything about the car. The seats are stupidly comfortable. They really are. The car's ride is comfortable. It's firm, but it's not spongy. And I think that's a result of the fact that this car is quite heavy. We've got a petrol engine and we've got a big battery pack in it. But it's... The words I'm looking for have escaped me. Tadek, help me out here. It's a wondrously comfortable place to be in. It's for middle-aged men. Dare I say it? You know, we're at the age where you're out of your two-door sports car, manic robot to roboting, and you just want to get from A to B in quiet, peace and quiet. And this gives you that. It is far better in terms of what I was expecting from a noise point of view than I could possibly have imagined. And for me, it's the greatest selling point on the car. It's the fact that you get in it, it is just stupidly quiet. Love it. We have to talk about the power. 152 kilowatts, 320 newton meters of torque. There's plenty of it about. Of course, being electric, it is instant torque, so all of it is available immediately. And whilst it's only got an 8.5 second 0-100 claimed time, the beauty about it is that you seem to get to 80 very, very quickly, and then it seems to just tap off a little bit in terms of the acceleration. But by the time you've hit 80, whatever it is that you're trying to get ahead of in the traffic is behind you anyway. So I have no complaints from the power side of things whatsoever. And again, it's just so quiet. The noise of my hands on the steering wheel is the loudest thing in the car at the moment. And the other thing that's nice and quiet about it, we must talk about it, is the complete lack of bongs. So the bongs are there, but they're not in your face. They're not obtrusive. And despite the fact that it has this really annoying feature called driver distraction, which is this little camera here, it's constantly monitoring you. And if you so much as deviate an inch from this appropriate, what it deems appropriate position, it alerts you. You can turn that off through the ADAS system. We'll get into that a little bit later. I'll show you all the extensive safety features this car has, and it's a long list, so it needs a segment all by itself. But the instant you deviate from that, it bongs and alerts you. You can turn it off, as I say, but you also have this fast speed button here on the steering wheel, and you can customize that to do various functions. So guess what I customized it to do? I customized it to turn that thing off. So as opposed to going through menus, I just push this button on the steering wheel twice and it turns that feature off, which is great because every time you turn the car on, all the ADAS systems are reset. So you end up scrolling through menus to try and turn off the stuff that you don't want. Okay, so the interior of this vehicle is one of its standout features. Just look how clean the lines are. There is not a single knob anywhere other than the two on the steering wheel, and even these are minimalist. So if we're talking about a minimalist interior, I don't think you're going to find much more minimalist than this. Even the air vents are hidden, for goodness sake. They're actually hidden underneath this dash here. And if you think they're not going to blow up and into your face, you'd be mistaken, because somehow, through some magic or other, and I don't fully understand how it works, it is capable of directing cold air up at you. So, instant, I have access to all my functionality on my vehicle, and it's actually laid out in a reasonably logical order. So under lighting, you can set your interior lighting, you can change your colors, you can actually set the music rhythm effect. So if you're playing music, the interior lighting will beat to the music. Exterior lighting, you can set all your headlamps, whatever it is you want. You've got your auto high beam on here. You've got intelligent lighting, so you can set your different things, like your headlamp height, for example, here. And as you go along, you can play with these. Doing this whilst you're driving, however, is of course where the system is a little bit more problematic. I did find that once I'd set things where I wanted them, I didn't really have to go back into the menus. But if you are trying to make adjustments on the fly, just be warned that that is going to be a bit of a challenge. The fun thing about this car, I want to touch on the safety systems on it whilst we're here on the interior, is there is a lot of it, right? So you have lane centering control. In your active safety, you have forward collision warning, emergency, automatic emergency braking, lane departure warning, lane keep assist, which I've turned off when I drive. You have emergency lane keeping assist, blind spot detection, door open warning, rear collision warning, rear cross traffic lights, and the ubiquitous distraction warning, which, as I say, I've turned off because I hate that. The system is not obtrusive in fact that you don't have massive flashing lights going off. You have gentle bongs and a notification on the driver's display panel saying what the problem might be coming up. Please slow down, you're about to have an accident. Please slow down, you're about to have an accident, and before the safety systems kick in. You also have this fantastic thing called an image assist, which is a vehicle startup assist and a hill assist image, which basically gives you, when you switch the cameras, some sort of thing about what's happening around you. I think. Never really got it to work, but you can also, interestingly enough, use the camera system as a car camera tracking system. So you can basically use it as a dash cam if you just insert an SD card to record onto, which is quite fun. So you get that for free with your vehicle. In terms of your other systems, you can turn your Leap Motor Assistant. This comes with the Leap Motor Assistant, which you can wake up. In other words, voice-activated commands. I found it okay without being exceptional. It's, I suppose, these days one expects faultless performance from them. And yeah, it's not bad. I just don't really see too much day-to-day application where I'd use it, other than asking it to turn off some of the safety systems for me. But other than that, it's a well-crafted, very nicely detailed, high-resolution, and fast response display. I've yet to determine whether the Leap Motor actually accommodates over-the-air updates, but there is certainly an option in here where you can set your updates on the vehicle, and obviously software updates and things are appropriately loaded. Whether they're over the air or not, I'm not sure at this particular point in time. So the minimalist approach with no buttons actually kind of works in this car. You can get away with it to a large degree on most things, and the day-to-day functions that you want, like your volume control and things, are controlled via a single button on the steering wheel. This button here, it's kind of like used occasionally, but I really haven't found that I've used it a hell of a lot on much on the vehicle. The biggest display, in fact, that I use to track my stuff is actually, I'm just interested in where I am with this vehicle. I've done 403 kilometers on it. I've used 6.2 liters per 100 for the time that the petrol motor was on. But notice this. The green is where I've used electric, and I've used fuel for 19.3 kilometers out of my 403 kilometers. And of those 19.3 kilometers, I've used an average of 6.3 liters per 100. So, as I said earlier, I'm comfortable. I can do 5,000 Ks on a single tank in this car. Just give it to me for a month, Stellantis, and I'll prove the case. Because I'm not doing more than 150 Ks a day, and just plugging it in overnight, I can plug it in. I also have tire pressure monitoring on the car just for everybody to have a quick look at. That's included in the vehicle. So, comprehensive infotainment car management system here works well. And if you like the minimalist look, can't fault it. My cameraman has pointed out stuff that's just second nature to me. I have wireless charging here. It's fast wireless charging. This little bump here is supposed to keep your phone off the thing so it doesn't get too hot. I do find my phone gets a little bit hot. That's fine. Massive cubby hole. Yes, you get a cubby hole. You've got this downstairs section where you can put stuff. And shall we talk about the one niggle I have with this car? I do have a niggle. I've got to have a niggle because everything else in the car is just fantastic. So at the moment, the car is on. I can tell that because the mirrors are out. Now it is off. If I'd left it on, it would run itself flat because it's running air conditioning and all the sounds, whatever systems you got going in the car. So you physically have to lock the car here with this key. And if you want to unlock the car, you have to physically unlock the car here with this key. So I know what you're thinking. But I pushed the seat all the way forward just to show you how much room is in this car. And I can assure you I did not. That is my driving position. And just look at the space I have here. It's beyond ridiculous. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And whilst we're at it, talking about huge, look at the size of this panoramic moonroof. It's not a sunroof because it doesn't move, but it's a moonroof. It's just absolutely enormous. You have more space in here at the rear than you do in the front by a country mile, by an absolute country mile. And then, of course, you can just have your fold-down thing here. No cup holders in here, which is interesting, but you've got cup holders here for the drinks, and then you've got vented, and you've got dual charging there for the kids. but you're really going to need a big kid to fill up the space here. It's borderline ridiculous how big it is. Really, it's enormous. And, of course, all the headroom. I mean, who that built this car for? Of course, it's powered. You have a little button here. And voila! Space. Parcel shelf cover, which is removable. So if you need more space, you just pop this out and you can get to that. Your seats do fold down. Bada boo, bada bing. And they're kind of flat-ish with the boot itself, because this flat space, loading space underneath here, underneath all our camera equipment, we do actually have a space-saving tire in here, and you get this natty little run flat kit in terms of that, and then all your cables and stuff go in there as well for your charging points. First time I opened this, I couldn't find the catch, but the secret is that you just pull the engine thing twice. There is no catch. How cool is that? So, gas struts, which is lacquer, and here's your little petrol motor. And as we say, it's a 1.5 normally aspirated petrol engine. And all it does is charge our electric motor, our batteries, which power the electric motor, which is sitting somewhere in the engine bay there. So quite a lot of cabling and stuff. It looks remarkably complicated, but you actually have quite a lot of space inside here in which to work. I like the car. I do. Looks wise, meh. It's okay. It's nothing that sort of leaps out at you, but it's not offensive. It's not aggressive. It's not anything really, I suppose, is the harshest thing one could say about it. These looks, I think, are likely to age relatively well because it's fairly bland. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
I actually had the chance to drive this car in Spain last year, William. I think we mentioned that on a previous episode of the show.
Yes.
My issue with it was all the bonging at the time, but you say that's really been dialed back now. And do you think it's pretty compelling package?
It's amazing that, you know, people actually listen to us, you know, or listen to you. And it's kind of like all those bongs are gone.
Was it just me?
No, it was just you, Doug. You were the loudest. You made the most noise, which is a great thing. So the bongs are gone. And as far as these cars go, so they position this as a REEV, a range extended electric vehicle. And I hate the word REEV. I prefer EREV. Extended range electric vehicle. Just swap the E and the R around. EREV sounds better than REEV. Maybe it's too much sci-fi watching. Reavers are bad people generally. As far as an extended range electric vehicle goes, it's got a lot going for it. The range on it around about 150 km. It starts moaning at about 100 and at about 30 km. It starts kicking its motor into to charge the batteries. So real world, you've got about 120-130 km if you're driving it like a loon. Maybe a little bit more if you drive it sensibly. Works for me. That says to me I can do 5,000 km on a single tank of fuel. I did ask Leapmotor to give one to me to verify my claim, but they haven't bitten at that particular opportunity yet. But it's a beautiful car to be in. It is really comfortable. Stupidly quiet on the highway, which is something that really struck me, is that actually all modern cars these days are doing a good job of insulating the cabin extremely well. The biggest thing I hated about the car, which I mentioned in the video, is of course the fact that you've got this ridiculous key that you have to tap to open everything all the time. They did come back to me and said, oh, you can do it via the app as well. So I'm kind of like, I don't want to open my phone to have to open my car. It doesn't make sense to me. Just give me a push button, good old fashioned remote control thing for the car, and I'll be happy. And as far as a car goes with absolutely zero buttons and knobs on it whatsoever, everything is driven by the touchscreen. You can get used to living with that quite quickly. It is possible to do. You have got knobs on the steering wheel for the primary important functions, but again, I would like to have just a control knob for my aircon temperatures and for my volume control on my tunes. But a really impressive vehicle, surprisingly impressive, and I didn't expect to be as enamored with it as I actually ended up being after a week with it.
Okay, fascinating.
There you go. Something for you to consider.
I've just got one bone to pick with these Chinese SUVs that are coming out. They all look the same. There's so many manufacturers from China that are launching electric or PHEV SUVs in the South African market, and I actually struggle to differentiate them, to tell them apart. They all look the same. Do you have the same problem, William?
I was about to say yes, but it's a lovely segue into our finishing segment, which is hot or not, because iCar breaks exactly what you've just said. Because I agree with you, they do all look the bloody same. I mean, that. In fact, it goes across the board. They might as well be an Acros, a Suzuki Acros, for all intents and purposes.
But so to have a car that's that considered an SUV? Is that an SUV technically?
Yeah, well, you know,
depends how you define an SUV, I suppose.
They all sort of blend into each other. So yes, I agree with you. The looks of these cars is becoming. You know, less distinguishable as the case may be. But now speaking of the iCar, this is the V23, and it is being launched soon. Apparently, we've been promised we'll be going on that launch, and we'll talk a little bit more about it because we got a sneak peek of it last time. But there's no way you can distinguish that as being anything other than what it is. You're not going to miss that as anything. You're going to ask, what is that? And when you know it's an iCar V23, you're not going to forget that in a hurry. Because, I mean, just look at it. It looks amazing. So it does break the mold in terms of looks. And maybe the Chinese have cottoned on to the fact that actually looks do count for something these days still. And it'll be an exciting car to see how this sells.
Right. Do you have the buttons lined up in front of you, William?
I do not, but in the magic of technology.
The producer's about to take it away, William. The iCar.
They produced the iCar. I think on looks only and based on the fact that we had a little bit of a sneak peek, it's cool. It's really cool. It's actually almost super cool. But I'm not going to say super cool because we don't yet know the pricing on it. So I think it's really an attractive car. So I'm gonna go.
Yeah.
Cool. And then you had the i3 up.
I did. That's our next car. BMW i3.
Now this one we don't know the pricing on, but it's all electric and it has 900 km of range. And just look at it.
Oh my word.
Oh, it's lovely. It's really lovely. It's beautiful. It really is a gorgeous, gorgeous looking car. I'm sold. It's going to be north of 1.5 million, I'm guessing, for the
55,000 pounds starting price in the UK. So yeah, I think we're probably looking around 1.4, 1.5 million by the time it lands here.
Yeah. But 900K range, it's a game changer. I really, really, really like it. I hate the price, but I really like it. It's just, it's
super cool.
That's a beautiful, beautiful looking car, and it's what BMW need to get right. So this is the Lepus L8 that's coming. Okay, so the Lepus L4 started at $300,000. Okay, again, entry level crossover SUV type thing. You know, sort of all these cars are. And if you were talking about looks, well, it's got a gigantic maw for a mouth, and you know, I suppose that kind of sets it apart. The rest of the lines, if you didn't see that, could be anything. So this one, we'll see what it looks like when it actually gets here. But I'm kind of like, the spec will be brilliant because it's a cherry sub brand. Is it better than?
It's not bad.
Anything it's not bad. The market. It's not terrible, but it's not a. Okay. Maybe I'll be more sold on it when it arrives and get to drive and have a look at it.
All right, and that's our last one for the week. That's the Suzuki Across, which you have just driven.
Across, it's a lovely car. It does everything well. It's Japanese. It's Suzuki. It'll never break. It's well priced. It's just a little bit boring.
Yeah,
a little bit underpowered, but
affordable.
It does everything well. Well priced. It does everything well. Yeah, it is well priced, $349 to $465, and I'm like, would I buy one? No, because I want something a little bit more exciting than that. If that was my heart talking, if my head was talking, yes. I mean, what's not to like? It's got flipping everything going for it, and you know, you cannot deny Suzuki their place in terms of how many of these vehicles that they are selling across the brand. Well-priced, well-specced, hard to fault, really hard to fault, just a bit boring.
I personally would give that a cool.
Okay. I'm going with you on this one, because otherwise I'd be right. But let's give it a cool. Yeah! Cool. Done.
Just based on the price, and it's not an ugly car. As SUVs go, it looks like, it does look a bit like just your next, any other SUV, but it's, particularly in that blue
not
color,
offensive.
It actually looks a bit distinguished in
not
that
offensive.
Color.
So the blue is actually not, yeah, you're quite right. The blue's a nicer color of the of the lot there. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's where we leave it for this week, guys. Thank you very much, Duncan. A pleasure.
Thank you,
as always.
Prince William. We'll be back with episode 6 next week. Thanks for watching.
Stay tuned.
As always,
like, share, and subscribe.
Subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We do recommend the video version of the show, of course, but we are available as an audio podcast as well. And just search Watches and Wheels, and you'll find us on the web. Thanks for watching. Until next week, from William and myself, take care. Bye.
Bye.